Hi, I'm Vicki Woodard. What follows is a recording made back in the 1990s by Cliff Berry and Mary Ellen Blandford, now known as Miriam Whalen. Since the 1990s, we have developed shadow work so that people can come work with us one-on-one as well as in groups. So you might be listening to this CD in preparation for a shadow work group, or maybe you're preparing for some shadow work one-on-one coaching, or maybe you are just beginning to explore the shadow work concepts. Either way, I want to invite you to just sit back and enjoy this recording by the original founders of shadow work.
Hi, I'm Cliff Berry.
And I'm Mary Ellen Blandford.
And we're speaking to you today to share some of our beliefs, the concepts we employ in facilitating shadow work. We want you to have a basic idea of what shadow work is, the model upon which it's based, before you would seriously consider coming to do that shadow work.
Mm-hmm. We also want the information on this tape to be a preparation for you if you're already signed up and planning to come to shadow work. We like to have folks know about our model and know what some of our beliefs and ideas are about shadow work and about personal growth so that you can gauge and see whether what we believe fits and works for you before you actually show up.
Now, there's a lot of information on this tape, and there's a lot more about shadow work. If you want to know, please feel free to call us with questions. We'll try and make sure that we give you answers from our great depth of wisdom on almost anything you can ask.
So we want to start by talking about what we mean by shadow. What is a shadow? What are we talking about when we're talking about shadow?
We like best Robert Bly's definition of the shadow in his book, A Little Book on the Human Shadow, where Bly says that we are all born into what he calls a 360-degree personality, which means that we pretty much express who we are in all directions all of the time without much censure.
Right. Our internal editors or sensors haven't been developed yet. So anything that comes to us to express, we just express it without thinking twice.
But as we grow up, our parents and teachers and our culture in general mm-hmm. teach us that all 360 degrees of the pie we're expressing are not necessarily acceptable.
Right.
And as Bly puts it, we soon develop this dynamic where it's like we're carrying a big bag over mm-hmm. our shoulders, and our culture teaches us to take certain slices of that 360 degree pie and throw it in the bag to repress it, to get it out of sight so that we won't be seen with it.
Right.
Oftentimes we start out by throwing in the bag things that we would call bad things.
Right.
You know, our anger or our jealousy or our envy of someone else. You know, we don't want to be seen with those things, or maybe parts of our sexuality mm-hmm. or parts of us that want to take revenge. You know, we start by throwing things that kind of the icky things in the bag. But along with them, a lot of gold gets thrown into the shadow too. Sometimes our belief in ourself, our sense of wholeness, our sense of being blessed and having a great mission in our lives, and our loving connection and intimacy can get thrown in the bag too.
Or our creativity, or our sense of playfulness. For so many of us, once we hit puberty, you know, we thought, okay, I'm getting to be an adult now, I can't play anymore. So we put our playfulness or our childlike qualities in the bag as well. So it's not just the more icky, nasty, dark stuff that we repress and throw in the bag, but a lot of us have also thrown more of our golden qualities into our shadow bags.
Yep. But in general, by shadow, we mean anything that has been repressed or denied or thrown in the bag, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. If we're trying to keep from being that part of ourselves, if we are trying to keep from showing that to ourselves or to others, then we would say that quality in us is in shadow.
So now you might be wondering, well, how can you know what's in shadow for you? And there are several different ways you can look for what qualities or energies you might have in your shadow bag. And one is, when you take a part of yourself and you throw it over your shoulder in the bag, it doesn't always actually make it into the bag.
Sometimes you miss the bag.
Right. And it winds up going all the way around the world, and that quality shows up in the person that you're talking to.
Where it bugs you.
Right, where it bugs you a lot. So I might have taken my righteous self and decided, I hate people who are self-righteous. I am not going to be self-righteous. That is not what I want to be. And I throw it over my shoulder and I decide I'm not going to be self-righteous. And then, lo and behold, I wind up running into self-righteous people everywhere I go in my world.
Mm-hmm. Maybe noticing them more than other people would notice them.
Right.
Because we're trying not to notice them in ourselves. This psychological phenomenon is called projection by most people. That we take parts of ourselves that we have difficulty owning or owning up to, mm-hmm. and paint them onto other people, or exaggerate them at least in other people. And that's one way of knowing something that may be your shadow. You know, what sorts of things really bother you when you see them in other people?
Right, or trigger you. We often talk about what do I get triggered by when I see it in other people? Or I might see things that I really revere or admire in others that are actually golden shadows of mine. I might look at someone in my life who is very spontaneous and think, wow, I can't believe that she can be like that. I wish I could be more spontaneous like she is.
Mm-hmm. And or I might look at someone who's very courageous and say, boy, I would never dare do that. I just don't have the courage to do that kind of a thing.
Right. Those are examples of ways where our golden shadow has gone around the world and shown up in someone else. So when I'm looking for what might be in shadow for me, one way to do that is to look at the things I really don't like in other people and the things I really love and admire in other people. Those can be clues about what might be in my shadow.
In the AA 12-step traditions, they have a saying. They say, if you spot it, you got it.
Right.
And that means exactly what we're talking about here. The things that you most notice, good or bad, in other people are often the things that indicate your shadows, the things in you that you're having difficulty focusing on.
Right. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't also have that quality. But it can be a clue for me to see what might be in my own shadow.
And now another way to know whether or not you might have something in shadow is to consider the idea that that bag you're carrying over your back might not be hermetically sealed.
Right.
In other words, some of that stuff we try not to be may be leaking out in our behavior in ways that we don't particularly appreciate.
Right. So one way you can see what might be leaking is to look for behaviors that you find yourself doing by accident rather than consciously and sort of in an on-purpose kind of way.
For instance, it's a common phenomenon for people who believe that it is really not okay for them to be angry to develop a sort of flash temper, which something will trigger them and all of a sudden their anger will come rushing out,
right,
more or less by accident. They look back and say, gee, I didn't mean to do that. It just came out. That's an example of the bag leaking there and another indication of what might be in shadow.
Right. So one way that you can look for energies or behaviors that might be leaking out of you is to look at behaviors that you find yourself in that seem to be in control of you rather than you being in control of that behavior.
Mm-hmm. If you want to look at some of things that might be compulsive in your life, your bad habits, maybe emotions, or even patterns of thought that come over you where you distinctly have the sense that you're out of control, there's something else is running you, that's often another indication that energy is in shadow for you. It's not that there are other energies that come in and push us around, but there are parts of ourselves that we have not owned, that we have in shadow, that can push us around because we won't acknowledge that they are part of us.
Right, exactly. It's a way that when I'm in denial about having a certain energy or a certain behavior as part of myself, then I'm not in control of that energy and I can't see it when I'm doing it. It just comes over me by accident in a way that's beyond my control.
Yep. So those are some of the ways you might begin looking at yourself to see what you might have in shadow. And we're going to talk for a moment here about why you might want to do shadow work.
Right. Now that you've seen some more about shadows and what shadows are like, you know, why might you want to do something like shadow work?
Now, we believe that inside of each shadow, there is a legitimate, useful, even golden energy.
Absolutely.
That you can access if you are willing to sort of get the coating off it. There's a way that when these things get put in the bag, they get a little crusty, they get a little moldy, they get a little smelly in there because they just haven't been used and handled much. And we think that shadow work is a way for you to have a space where you can explore some energy, where you don't have to explore it for real in your life, and sort of pick through it and find the wisdom in that piece of yourself. Find the motivation, the energy, the gold inside of that energy, and use it in your life.
At the same time, it's not useful for you to just start doing that anywhere and everywhere in your life. We believe that you need what we call a container, which we're going to talk some more about in a minute. You need a container, a symbolic space away from your regular life where you can take things out of the bag and work with them, polish them up, and find find the gold at the center that you want to take back out into your day-to-day life.
We've also found that doing shadow work, having a place to take these things out and work with them, can keep you from having the experience that something else is controlling you or that you're acting by accident. We often say in shadow work that if you can do something, if you can act out of an energy on purpose in a safe ritual space, in a symbolic container, then you can learn to stop acting out of that energy outside of that special shadow work space. So one of the purposes for doing shadow work is to learn to stop behaviors that are goofing up your life outside of a shadow work container.
We believe that the process of putting things into the shadow bag, putting things in shadow, and then taking them out again and working with them to reintegrate them into ourselves, we believe that that is a useful process, and that working with my shadow is a way of powering my life. I don't actually believe that I will ever be shadow free. But the process of putting things in the bag and taking them out is a way of growing and becoming a fully mature adult human being.
Yeah, but who can use all of your parts in a sort of glorious harmony that feels very intense and alive and a very joyful way to live life.
Right.
So that's what we wanted to tell you about the shadow. And we're going to take a tiny break here and come back in a moment and talk a little bit about the container, the space in which we do shadow work. We have come to recognize increasingly in our work in this area that just as important as whatever brilliance the facilitators may bring to the process is what we call the container in which they're working.
Right.
If you can sort of imagine drawing a circle around a group of people, we think that is actually made up of the beliefs that those people have agreed to share in that container. Sort of draw a circle around the place. The makeup of that circle is just as important as any action that's taken inside of the circle. And that circle we call the container.
Right.
By which we mean it's sort of the cauldron that holds the mix for this psychological process.
We believe that there cannot be safe shadow work without a safe container. So anytime we get together to do work, whether it's with old hands, people who've done lots of shadow work with us before, or brand new folks who've never worked with us, we take time to set the container before we jump into doing a lot of personal process work, shadow work processes.
Right. We think it's absolutely essential that you know what our beliefs are as facilitators, because we're holding most of that container at first.
Right.
That this makes it safer for you. It does not mean that you have to agree with our beliefs. You just need to know what they are so that you can more or less navigate in that space and not be unduly influenced or manipulated by the beliefs we hold. One of the ways we would define an unsafe container is a place in which the facilitators, whether or not they mean to, are pushing participants into a certain resolution or a certain kind of process because the facilitators are holding beliefs that the participants don't know about.
Right. We certainly have our agendas and our beliefs about what a given participant needs. And we do our best to make those beliefs and agendas explicit up front before someone gives themselves over to us so that that person can judge whether or not they fit with us.
Right. So one of the purposes of this tape is for us to explain some of our beliefs to you so you can make a judgment about whether or not shadow work fits for you.
Right.
And one of the first things we do in the shadow work container whenever we gather a group of people together is we begin by asking everyone to explain or answer this question. What do you want to have happen here? Mm-hmm. That's how we begin building that container, that circle around a group, by having everyone say in that space what they want to have happen. And then as facilitators, we believe we can navigate with any given participant as to what they have said they want to have happen. It's a way we can hold ourselves accountable to not be putting our agenda on someone else.
Right. So within our shadow work container, we want things to be fully consensual. So if you choose to come to shadow work, you choose what to share, what to work on, and what not to share. You can think about the shadow bag that you're carrying over your shoulder. You can think about all the shadows in there as a bunch of onions. And you choose which onion you want to pull out of the bag and share with us. And you choose as well if you're going to just peel away a little bit of the brown, kind of papery skin on the very outside, or if you're going to take out your cleaver and cut your onion all the way to the core. We're really not interested in making you cleave your onion all the way to the core if that's not what's right for you.
Right. We love to watch and empower people to work at their own speed.
Right.
We think that's the work that lasts the best. So we're talking here about the container that exists sort of in space, in the psychological space in which we work. We want to say a word, too, about how we see personal growth working through time. What's our model for that? What are our beliefs around that? And we'll begin by saying that we think that it is in order. It is a good thing that people begin by putting things in the bag and then take them out later.
Right. That there are cycles of growth in all of our lives, and that is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes we liken this to climbing a mountain. We say that the cycle of growth, a life, is like climbing a mountain. That there's an uphill side, usually where people are striving for some ideal, and as they strive to climb the mountain, they're putting lots of stuff in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily trying to be all of themselves, they're just trying to get somewhere.
Right, but they're putting off the excess baggage.
Exactly.
That's not serving them in the climb up the mountain.
And then usually in the second half of a cycle of growth, people get to the top of the mountain, they get some realization, then they want to bring that back down into their life. And here's where shadow work really comes in
right. The
best. Because shadow work is a place where before you simply bring brand new realizations directly into life and sometimes suffer the consequences of
right. The
fact that they don't always fit immediately, shadow work is a place where you can bring out the parts of yourself that you put in the bag earlier and work with them in a safe way so you know how to handle them, you can harness them, and then when you bring them back into your real life, they'll work much, much better.
So shadow work is like a way station on the way back down the mountain. It's a place where you can stop off and do some work to reintegrate the parts of you that you left behind earlier in your current cycle of growth, a way that you can reintegrate them in order to use them to power your life.
Yeah, but most of the people who come to shadow work are in the second half of some kind of a cycle of growth. So we don't have a lot of very young people who come. And if they are usually in the second half of some cycle of growth. This is more for going downhill, we say, than it is for going uphill.
Right.
So that's a little idea of what we believe about how time moves through a shadow work container.
So the rest of the tape, really, we're going to spend talking about our model of the space container, kind of the four walls of the shadow work room as we see it.
And we'll take a little break, and we'll come right back to that. So next we're going to talk to you about how we see the walls of this container. And in our model there are four walls.
Right.
We'll talk about four different kinds of energies that we think hold a circle in which all of human experience happens.
Mm-hmm.
We like best the names devised for these four energies by Dr. Robert Moore and Doug Gillette, who wrote a book called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, in which they distilled Carl Jung's archetypal psychology down into these four descriptions of four basic archetypes as they were seen in the male psyche.
Now, we've done a lot of work with Moore and Gillette's archetypes, and I would say adapted them for our use. And we have also found that their descriptions with some additions work really well for women as well. So we've kind of broadened it out into those archetypes as they live in men and women.
Yep. So if you like, you could sort of envision a pyramid with four sides on it. This is an image that Robert Moore and Doug Gillette use in their book quite a bit. And you can imagine that each one of the faces of this pyramid describes one energy that we are going to talk about.
Right. Cliff actually ran across Moore and Gillette's book first. And when he did that, he did the brilliant thing that he always does, which is he started to see connections with this system of the four archetypes and other systems of four from all different cultures around the world.
For instance, if you look at the four elements as they're described in astrology, or the four family roles that people are said to grow up in, or the four most basic emotions that people feel, or almost anything else that comes in fours, mm-hmm. you can see that Moore and Gillette in some ways rediscovered a very basic truth that has been around for a very long time.
Right. So we've got this system of using different models to describe each of these four energies. And what we want to do is kind of go around our pyramid of four and describe to you what we see in each quarter.
Yep. So there'll be four parts that follow this. And for each wall of the pyramid, we'll talk about the archetype that Robert Moore and Doug Gillette...
Either king or sovereign. We call it sovereign as a gender-neutral term, or warrior or magician or lover.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about kind of how there's a masculine side to that energy and a feminine side. Mm-hmm. We'll describe the element there, air, earth, water, or fire. We'll look at Sharon Wegscheider's work about the four family roles that people grow up in and tell mm-hmm. you which one of those fits on that side. We'll talk about which of the basic human emotion kind of acts as a gateway to that side of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about all of those different elements as a way of describing the sort of healthy, well-rounded energy in each quarter that an adult can access.
Right.
Although most of us don't access every quarter in that sort of healthy, well-rounded way at all times, because we have shadows.
Right. And then next, after we try and sort of describe how these energies show up in the quote-unquote healthy way, we'll talk about what it looks like when this side of the pyramid goes into shadow.
Right.
When you take this kind of energy and put it in your shadow. For instance, one way to describe these different energies is to say that there are some very old and basic animal instincts in each one of us, and one of these instincts lives on each of these walls. And in our process of becoming cultured and civilized people, we at some point all decided that we were going to try not to be so much like animals, and so we put some of our animal instincts in shadow. And so we'll talk to you about how these kind of ancient energies inside of us, some of our ancient instincts, show up to us as shadows on each of these four quarters.
We'll also talk a little bit about the way we decide to repress a part of ourselves, to put a part of ourselves in shadow, is because we receive some kind of psychological or emotional or spiritual wound when we're growing up from our families or our culture or, you know, wherever. But we get wounded in such a way that makes us decide that we need to repress a part of ourselves, and then out of that grows a shadow. So we'll also talk some about the really deep wound that we see in each quarter.
Yep. Usually that wound comes from our accepting some kind of a shaming message. We end up with some kind of a voice in our head that says something to us all the time that is sort of shaming, and that will start this whole shadow process off.
So when we're looking at shadows, usually what happens is that the energy in a given quarter shows up as having too much. I look like I have too much of this energy, or I look like I have too little of it. So if I have a shadow in my magician quarter, I'll look like I have too much magician energy, or I'll look like I don't have any magician energy. Now, we've found in shadow work that, to our minds, it's more useful to work with participants on bringing up what they seem to have too little of, rather than trying to lessen what someone seems to have too much of. In our book, that trying to lessen what you have too much of is the way things go in shadow in the first place.
Right.
So we found it much more useful if someone looks like they have too much of one energy, we can find another one of the four that they have too little of. And what we'll do is bring up what they have too little of. we actually don't believe that you can have too much of any given energy. It's you can't possibly have too much magician energy. What can happen is you can have too much for the current balance of all four energies so that it's out of balance. But we don't actually believe you can have too much of any of these energies.
Yeah, this work is essentially about learning to balance yourself. In some ways, about learning to carry a container around you that's balanced so you can really be yourself in the middle of that container. And in each of the four directions, we'll also describe to you a tool that we use for bringing that energy out of shadow. There is a great tool in each of those four directions that can be used to rectify that energy when it's been shadowed.
Right. So as we talk about the four directions, we will be talking about what we believe is in each of the different quarters. And we want you to remember that these are our beliefs and that we are working to make our shadow work container safe by sharing our beliefs with you. Be aware as we go that different cultures actually line up energies in different ways, and none of this is actually set in stone. This is just our snapshot of these four energies.
Yep. You should find a map included with this tape that will kind of lay out for you what we're saying in visual form if it helps you to see it with your eyes. If you don't have such a map, feel free to contact us at Shadowwork Seminars and we'll send you one. And keep in mind also that while these four archetypal energies are easy to separate in thought, in life they are not so easy to separate. When we really get down to doing something, oftentimes all of these energies combine to create real life.
And also, as you listen to us talk about the shadows in the various quarters, most people start comparing what we're saying to themselves. And so I'm imagining that you'll start looking for your own shadows in there. And that's a very useful thing to do, and you may gain some real insight there. At the same time, be aware of, you know, the abnormal psychology 101 problem where you start seeing yourself as having every problem in the world.
And, you know, I have everything.
Right. There's no need as you listen to this tape for you to take all of this on, okay? So see what fits for you, but don't take everything on.
We don't think it's necessarily useful to try and figure out what is your shadow as a whole person. That can be a really tough thing to figure out and doesn't particularly help you when you do figure it out. We prefer to look at what's your shadow relative to a certain situation. Relative to something you want, relative to a problem you're having, or relative to a dream you have, what's your shadow relative to that? We think it makes it much easier and less shaming to look at the shadows you may have if you're looking at them in relation to something that you want to accomplish. Because in different places in their lives, people have different shadows. So we caution you against maybe getting a little hung up on thinking, oh, I always have warrior and shadow every time I turn around.
Right. So we're going to take a little break now, and when we come back, we will talk about the Magician Quarter. So, the Magician Quarter. We place the energy of the magician in the West.
And the job or the purpose of magician energy in our lives as we see it is to generate for us options. It's to give us guidance through detachment.
Right. Magician energy is about perspective and options, as Cliff said. It's about being able to get a wide view, see a variety of possibilities. And magician is not so much concerned with morality, with right or wrong or good or bad. Magician energy is about seeing.
Mm-hmm. In order to access your magician energy, you want to be able to step out of a situation, detach from it, get away from it, look at it from a distance, and see what you can see from there.
Right.
It's not necessarily a warm, heartful seeing. It's just an objective seeing of all the possibilities.
Right.
That's what we would call magician energy.
Right. The magician is like the elder or the advisor energy. You know, in mythology, it's like Merlin or Morgaine in the Arthur myths.
Yeah. In more modern times, we have therapists or facilitators or ministers who help us get perspective, sometimes politicians as well.
Right. The magician is the one who holds and sets the container. The magician's the one who draws the circle that holds the container.
And we acknowledge that in the magician energy, in this side of the pyramid, there is both kind of a masculine side of that energy and a feminine side. This is not to say that men only have the masculine side and women only have the feminine side, but we each have both inside of us.
Right.
But at the same time, it's worth looking at how these two might be different from each other.
Because we really believe that for me to be operating out of a well-rounded magician place as a woman, I need to have access to both my feminine magician and my masculine magician.
Right. So for an example, masculine magician energy, as we see it, mm-hmm. is like cooking with a recipe.
Right.
You know, or doing your life from a model. In fact, if you learn this shadow work model and use it, we would say that's your masculine magician. Taking in this structure and trying to make things come out by cooking with a recipe.
Right. Whereas the feminine magician comes more from the intuitive side. When I'm really operating from my feminine magician, I go into a situation and I feel it out. I feel into it and I feel it out to see what the situation is calling for in the moment. You might think of that as cooking by taste. I throw a bunch of ingredients into my pot, maybe even starting with the model or the recipe, starting with my masculine magician, but then I bring my feminine magician in to kind of taste the soup and see what else is called for. What else does it need? What would be appropriate?
Yep, that's the feminine side. So on this side of the pyramid, we also like to overlay what we call other systems of four energies on top of what we've been talking about so far. And one of those is the ancient astrological system of air and water and earth and fire. And on this side of the pyramid, we see the air energy and the air signs, and which means that, like the air, this energy is detached. We often say that someone's up in the air, or they're up in their head, or they have a bird's eye view of things. We think air is a great image for this magician kind of energy.
Then the next layer of the pyramid that we want to look at comes from Sharon Wegscheider's work, as we said earlier, around the family roles that children grow up in families. And Sharon sees four basic family roles that a child can grow up in. And in the magician quarter, the one that we see is what's called the mascot or the clown.
Mm-hmm. In some traditions, this is sort of called the trickster energy, mm-hmm. or the coyote energy, mm-hmm. or the comedian.
Right. This is the kid in the family who is able to detach enough from whatever's going on to make a joke, to crack people up, to take an alternate perspective on what's happening. And at some level, the more dysfunction or stress a family is under in a current situation, the more likely one kid is to be able to detach and make a joke or see some other perspective about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Also, we like to look at what we call the four most basic emotions, which are anger and grief and fear and joy. And we see each of those emotions not so much as being on one side of the pyramid, but being like a gateway to that side of the pyramid. For example, in the magician quarter here, we see the human emotion of fear as being what we would call the gateway emotion to the magician. That doesn't mean that the magician is always afraid or the magician energy is necessarily afraid. What it means is that if we are able to really feel our fear, to welcome it rather than fighting it, and really just feel that deep emotion inside of us, that will open up our magician cord inside of us. We may hear this sort of magician energy talking to us. It works like a gateway that ushers us into the depth of this particular energy.
In a lot of different cultures, the initiation into taking on a magician role in the society is facing some sort of fear, is going through a fearful initiation in order to be able to come back in the role of magician or shaman or whatever into the society.
Yep. And on another system of thought, we began looking some time ago at the different animal instincts that we think people still carry in their bodies and therefore in their minds. We think all people have animal instincts around territory, around bonding, around being the alpha or the smaller animal. And in this quarter, we think all of us have certain predator or predatory instincts. That is simply to say that we all have wiring in our bodies that as animals, we need, unfortunately, to kill and eat other things to survive, and we've been programmed in a way that enables us to enjoy that process. And this is a kind of energy that's been put in shadow very much in our culture because we don't want to be human predators. Predator has a very negative tone, and yet inside there's a part of us that is. We eat things to live. So in this quarter, we put the animal instinct of predator.
Right. So what does magician energy look like when it goes into shadow? Mm-hmm. It can show up one of two ways. If it looks like I have too little magician energy, I look dense. And what you might hear me say is things like, I don't know. I just don't know. It's like I can't see. I have no perspective. I have no options. I have no insight. It's like I have no magician energy. My knowing is in the bag.
Yep. And on the other hand, a magician shadow might show up as having way too much of this kind of air detached option energy. My brain might just be cycling so fast I can't keep up with it. I might feel very fragmented and confused. There's just way too much going on in my head. Maybe I feel like I'm very in my head. Mm-hmm. And that's because it looks like I have too much magician energy, sort of for the mix of whatever's going on in my life.
Right. The deep wound or the shaming message that winds up putting magician energy in shadow is some kind of message that I get that tells me I'm bad. Mm-hmm. Somehow I do something or I just am me in my life and I get the message from somewhere that I am bad.
Yep. And once I internalize this message and I start telling myself that I'm bad or that parts of me are very bad, I start going into magician shadows. We have found that it works much better in terms of growth if we can see that parts of ourselves are in shadow. Parts of ourselves may not function well. Parts of ourselves, if we let them go, will hurt other people, and that needs to be dealt with. But we do not believe that energies in and of themselves inside of us are evil or bad. We think that starts a deep wound going, and in some ways it creates a vicious cycle, where the more we try not to be bad, the more it sneaks out of us in shadow, and we just get into all kinds of trouble. If we really accept the message that inside of us we're bad somehow.
Right. So the tool that we use when we are doing shadow work processes to help bring magician energy out of shadow, the tool we use, we call a split. And it's a tool we've borrowed from Gestalt therapy and psychodrama. A lot of different technologies use splits. But a split is a way of helping someone detach from whatever they're in emotionally or psychologically and step outside of that to bring them some perspective.
Right. So, for instance, if someone is working in a shadow work seminar, they'll say, you know, I'm really afraid of my own power.
Right.
I know I have this power inside of me, but it really scares me. Mm-hmm. We will ask them often to somehow portray that power. Maybe they'll pick someone in the group to play their power.
To do a little role play.
Little role play there. And then we will ask them to step away from that, to split themselves off from it into a different position and look back at it. And that's what we mean by splitting. We mean separating or analyzing or putting things out in their different parts, because we find that as soon as we can get the different parts of something out and a person can look at what's going on in their mind from a detached magician perspective, they'll often get lots more options about what to do about it.
It's a way of accessing your inner facilitator. We believe that all of us are our own best facilitators. You know, we are all facilitating our own lives all the time. And when Cliff and I step into the role of facilitator for someone else, we want to access that person's inner facilitator as well. And using this technology of splits helps us do that so that we can lay your situation out in front of you in a role play kind of scenario and step you out of it, step you back with us, and we can get guidance and insight from you about what needs to happen in this situation to make the shift or the transformation that you want to have happen there.
Yes. We think there are lots of different kinds of personal work where you can go, and people will tell you to get out of your head and get into your feelings.
Right.
From our point of view, that's more the kind of work where you want someone to hit you between the eyes with a 2x4. In our work, we like to honor what's in your head. We like to honor your magician. We like to work with it. We find that oftentimes the problems that people have in their lives can be solved simply by taking a step outside of the whole thing, getting a good, clear looking at it, and getting a different point of view on it.
Right. We do lots of deep emotional feeling work with people. That's certainly an enormous part of shadow work. It's just that we believe it's also important to have your head, to have your magician, to keep your perspective online as well.
Right. So that gives you some idea of this side of the pyramid. And we're going to take a little break here. Next, we'll come back and talk to you about another side of the pyramid, the side with the king and queen on it, the side we call the sovereign energy side.
So now we're in the land of the sovereign, which we place in the north.
Sovereign is our gender-neutral term for king and queen
right.
energy. And sovereign energy, as we see it, has to do with both sort of the visioning of the dream, mm-hmm. of the mission, the possibility for your life, and the motivation to carry out whatever it takes to achieve that dream or mission.
Right. Sovereign energy is, it's about having, as Cliff said, the vision or the mission, and also about having the support or the nurturing or the surround that will help bring that vision, that mission to fruition.
Yep. In fact, we see it more as the king side of sovereign energy, to see the mission and to outline the dream, and we see it more as queen energy, to nurture and motivate and bless and have the esteem that really empowers the carrying out of that mission.
Right. Unlike magician, sovereign energy is very concerned about morality and right and wrong. Sovereign is a much warmer, much more emotionally connected energy than is magician energy.
That's right. If the magician is like the eyes that see, then the sovereign is like the heart.
Right.
Cares.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sovereign is also about self-esteem. Sovereign is about having the esteem to be able to dream and to be able to provide the surround and the nurturing for my dream.
So roles in our society in this direction are like leaders or parents or people who are carrying the vision and leading other people in that direction.
Right, carrying the torch. Caring. If you will, which leads us into talking about the element that we see
right.
in the sovereign quarter, which we connect fire energy with the energy of the sovereign.
It's often said that the leaders hold the flame, or we often put an eternal flame on the grave of a leader. And in terms of motivation, we often say that that's like a fire in the breast, you
right.
know. When,
or that someone's on fire with their idea. We see fire energy as being very connected with the sovereign.
Yep. And in Sharon Wegscheider's work on the four family roles, she describes there the role of the little parent or the hero in the family. This was my role growing up in my family. I played the hero for some time. And this is a kid who will get the good grades and go out and achieve and get things done and just try and strive for perfection as their way of identifying themselves and relating back to their family.
In a family that's under a lot of stress or really has some challenges going on, this is the kid who will take over the role of the parent and will take care of the other kids if need be, even, in order to keep the family functioning.
Mm-hmm. Again, we said that one of the four emotions acts like a gateway into each side of the pyramid. The gateway emotion that we see in sovereign energy is joy. And by that we mean that it's when I am feeling the happiest with myself, when I am in my joy about what a wonderful being I am, that will often open me up to start dreaming about what I might want to try and do, and that will motivate me to carry that out. We think while sovereign energy is not itself always joyful, it's often accessed through joy.
The animal instinct that we see as lining up in this quarter with sovereign energy has to do with what we call the alpha circuit. It's the circuit that you see a lot in wolves, where there is an alpha male and alpha female, and the rest of the pack just is subservient to them, really. And the alpha female is the only one who has the right to bear young. And she makes sure that that's what happens. And we think that we as humans still have an instinct in us to do one side or the other of that dance, to either be the alpha, be the main one in our pack, or else to really follow an alpha and to put someone else up in that position for us to be able to follow.
Right. And it's not hard to see how in our culture it would be easy for us to put some of that in shadow. It's, you know, when someone jumps up to play Rin Tin Tin on top of the rock with the wind blowing in their face, it's just natural for someone else to want to cut them down and say, we really shouldn't do it that way. And so let's look at how this side of the pyramid breaks down into its bipolar shadows, as Dr. Moore would say. On the one hand, if there's too little sovereign energy, we tend to get parts of ourselves that are very shy. It's sort of like our fire's gone out. We'll hear ourselves saying, oh, I can't do this. It's too hard. I'm tired. It's sort of, you know, the fire's gone. There's no motivation. The heart is gone out of it.
This is often a person who we want to light a fire under him to get him going. If I'm on the other side of that, where I'm really coming from an inflated sovereign energy, then I'm in a place of saying, I can do anything. I can ace this. I can do it perfectly. And what's really going on in me is I'm kind of shining. I am looking for love. I'm not coming from a place that we think of as sort of healthy grandiosity, a place where I'm feeling good about myself and proud. This is more a place where there's some unspoken need going on inside of me that I'm trying to get met. I'm trying to perform perfectly in order to get you to love me.
Mm-hmm. The deep wound, or sort of the shaming message on this side of the pyramid, is when we accept a message, however it's given to us, that we are not good enough. If I get the message from my family or my culture that says, Cliff, you know, you're good, you're okay, but you're really not good enough. You know, you could be reaching higher, you could be going further, you're really not reaching your full potential. That will put me into sort of a vicious cycle. If I will accept that identity, that belief about myself, that will really exacerbate all these sovereign shadows. I'll be out there shining to try to prove that I am good enough, or I'll be falling back into being shy and small, feeling, oh, I'll never be good enough.
Right. Right. We often think about this wound in the sovereign quarter as coming from conditional love. When we're loved for what we do and how we perform, rather than just for who we are.
Yep. And also on this side of the pyramid, there's a tool that we use to help rectify sovereign energy, to bring it back online when it's in one or another of these different shadows.
Right.
And that tool is support or blessing, usually delivered by some kind of a big or ideal figure.
Right.
As an example, sometimes people will come out to do a piece of shadow work and we'll get some of their different parts out on the carpet.
We'll do some splits.
We'll do some splits, and we'll find a voice in their head, as we would call it, a part of themselves that just feels so small and unworthy, and this little bitty shy part where the fire's gone out. And we have noticed that sometimes what we can do is hook that part up with a big, helping, nurturing, mothering, fathering part. We'll come in and give it some help, give it some blessing.
Unconditional love.
Some unconditional love. Right, where that part is, it's not saying, you know, you're good, but you could be better. It's
right.
Saying, you know, you're beautiful, you're wonderful,
I love you just the way you are. Yeah, I love you just the way you are. I'm proud of you. You are wonderful.
And that will really help bring someone who's in this shy place out of shadow. It will help sort of expand their chest a little bit and bring up their self-esteem.
It'll also really help someone who's in a more inflated sovereign place, someone who's performing for love, when they actually get some unconditional love, can rest and relax. They can quit performing and they can just be. So it will help hold them as well.
So that gives you some ideas of the layers of the pyramid that we have on this side, on the sovereign side. And next, we're going to take a little break and then come back and talk to you about the third side of the pyramid, the side where we have what we call lover energy.
So now we're in the land of the lover, which we place in the direction of the east.
Lover energy, we have to be about connection. It's all about this sort of gut level connection. If the magician's in the head or the eyes and the sovereign is in the heart, then this one is down in the abdomen, the guts. It's about connecting. It's also about our sexuality and connecting sexually with people. It's all right down in this front half of our body.
Our sexuality and our sensuality. When I'm really connected with my lover, I'm in a place of oneness with all that is. Mm-hmm.
So really the purpose of bringing lover energy into our lives is a way of bringing us connection or love through feeling. If we're willing to feel our feelings, we can gain a lot more connection with ourselves, with others around us, even with our higher power or something. If you want to be connected with something, your feelings will connect you with it in the lover quarter.
Right. Robert Moore says that we are born into our lover, that we're born into the garden, that we're born into this space of just oneness and beingness with all of life, with all that exists.
And people that in our society who model this kind of energy are artists. I mean, songwriters and people in the movies and mostly people who present some kind of art that try and help us connect with our lives and with ourselves, with the meaning of our lives through the feelings.
Mm-hmm. Lover Quarter is also the place where our inner child lives, we think. And it's the place where our ability to feel our feelings lives, our ability to feel either our emotions or physical sensations. But lover is about feeling and connection.
And once again, there's kind of a masculine and feminine side to this wall of the pyramid, where we see masculine lover energy as being different from feminine lover energy in the way it seeks to connect.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's masculine lover energy that is sometimes called spirit by people, or spiritual path, where there's an attempt to sort of move upwards into sort of a universal vision of everything, to get up above it all into one sort of shining ideal that will connect us with everything.
Mm-hmm.
To get up into the clouds some way and really see it all from there. That being kind of the path of spirit.
Whereas the feminine lover energy is more like what we would call soul, is more going down into the chaos and the muck and down into specifics rather than up into a big picture. My feminine lover wants to get down and get into it with someone and talk about it and, really feel into it together. It's a much more down, sinking in sort of place, than whereas my masculine lover wants to rise up more into spirit.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the four elements, we place the element of water in the lover quarter. We think lover energy, this connecting feeling, energy flows like water. We'll often say that someone's all wet if they think they're in too much, or that they're dry if they're not in enough water. Many of the words in our language describe water and wetness as this kind of energy.
Right. The family role that we see that children grow up in that corresponds with the lover quarter is the role of the lost child. This is the kid in the family who's usually very quiet, deep, intense, often a very artistic child. And often it's the child who's off on their own a lot, either in their room reading or drawing or out in the woods connecting with the trees or the animals. And at the same time, it's often the kid who's very intuitively connected with all the other family members. This kid may not seem like they're in the thick of things, but they're the one who knows what's going on with everybody else.
Right. Connected somehow.
Right.
The emotion that we see as a gateway into lover energy is the emotion of grief. We say that because we think that it's when we feel our sadness, often it's after I cry, that I will feel most connected to the people close to me, or most connected to my life, or most connected to myself. If it's fear that ushers us into the magician quarter and joy that ushers us into the sovereign, then we see grief as the one that most ushers us into the lover quarter.
Right. Once again, it's not that the lover is a sad place to be, but that grief or sadness is the gateway for me into my lover energy.
Yep. The animal instinct that we place in the lover quarter is the instinct to bond, the bonding instinct. animals have very, very strong instincts about sticking together, coming together in order to mate, or sticking together in a flock or a herd or a school for their own protection. Mm-hmm. Animals have very, very strong instincts, and so do we think. And much of love energy is an evolution of those things inside of us.
Mm-hmm. So what does lover energy look like when it goes in shadow? Well, if I'm in a place where I'm sort of in a deflated lover place, where it looks like I have too little lover energy, then what will be happening is I will be dry, as Cliff said before. I'll be stoic. You'll hear me say things like, I know I'm feeling something, but I can't get at it. It's like I can't connect with it. I'll have a hard time really opening up and being vulnerable with someone else. I won't be able to feel my feelings. If you ask me how I feel, I'll tell you a story about how I'm feeling, rather than really being able to name the emotion that I'm experiencing.
On the other hand, if my lover energy is such that it's really too much for the mix, I'll experience a kind of overflowing of emotion. I'll be acting out when I don't want to be acting out. I'll have the sense that my emotions are getting me. I have this when I'm crying when I don't want to be crying, when I'm afraid when I don't want to be afraid, I'm angry when I don't want to be afraid. I have the sense somehow that these emotions are just running through me. It's like I'm out drowning in my emotions someplace, and there's just way, way too much going on for me at any given time. Mm-hmm. We identify most addictions or compulsive behaviors, even illnesses in the body, with lover energy. Most of those things we think actually are a way of kind of going back and forth between being stoic and too dry in lower energy and then overflowing. Sort of like if I'm on a diet and I'm not doing well on my diet, on the one hand I'm saying, gosh, I've got to quit eating, I've got to, you know, quit being in this soft, vulnerable part of myself and try and sort of slam my lover in the closet. And then, of course, it comes out of the shadow next time ice cream shows up, and I'm gobbling this stuff as fast as I can, and I'm in the overflowing place with it. And many addictive or compulsive patterns we think are actually lover phenomena, and we find that looking at them as lover shadows really helps.
The deep wound or the shaming message that I receive in the lover quarter that contributes to those shadows is I get a message that tells me that I don't love right, that I don't connect right. And it sort of triggers off that bonding instinct I have that Cliff was talking about earlier. When I get the message that I'm not loving good enough, I'm not loving right, the way I love or the way I connect isn't right, then I wind up with a lover shadow.
Yeah, either try and even sort of give up on love and become very stoic about it, or try and push my face into it and do anything that looks like love, and suffer somehow, feel somehow, and I'll often get my addictions going much more, so then I'll be in all this trauma and grief, be having a terrible time, in some ways all because underneath I am carrying the shaming message that I really don't love right and I need to learn how to love better.
Right. So the tool that we use in the lover quarter to work with someone with lover energy and shadow is we work in their body. Lover is such a body-centered energy that when we want to work with someone's lover energy, we go right to their body. We may ask them what they're feeling in their body and work metaphorically. We may get them to focus on what they're feeling in their body and then use a technique that we call the switch, which is a way of sort of reframing what's going on for them in their body. There are a variety of different ways that we get at lover energy, but we primarily work it in the body.
Right. If you visualize what's going on with you as a picture inside of your body, in other words, if you were to imagine that you had butterflies in your stomach, mm-hmm. or a knot in your throat,
a knife in your back,
as soon as you start seeing it that way, if you close your eyes and go into that image and go into the body feelings of it, you're starting to work metaphorically in the body. And that's the lover tool that we work to rectify lover energy when it's in shadow, whether the shadow's too little or the shadow's too much.
So that's the land of the lover. And we're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we will make a big switch and move into the warrior quarter.
Thank you.
So now we are in the land of the warrior, which we put in the South. And warrior is our gender-neutral term for warrior energy. We've looked, you know, the way we found the word sovereign as a gender-neutral term in the North, we've looked for other terms for this energy. But warrior, we like warrior for men and women.
Yeah, so we just use it interchangeably for both the masculine side of this energy and the feminine side.
Right.
The masculine side of this energy we see more as offense, and the feminine side we see more as defense.
Right.
So we see it as more the masculine side of me that will carry out some kind of a plan or an operation, sort of trying to expand the boundaries of my own personal realm. And we see it more as the feminine side of me that tries to defend whatever boundaries my personal realm now has against whatever perceived attack there may be.
Right, and that's a lot what warrior energy is about, is boundaries. Warrior energy is about power and accomplishment through having boundaries, either setting boundaries or expanding boundaries.
Right. And the power, in some ways, comes because it's the warrior energy in us that we think is in service to the other three. That when the magician sees the options, and when the sovereign chooses an option and mm-hmm. sees that as the vision, and the queen side of the sovereign, you know, blesses and empowers that choice, and the lover is seen to serve that, or the deep feeling is brought into this process, then it's usually the warrior archetype in us that carries that out. A good motto for warrior energy is just do it.
Right.
Like, a warrior loves action.
Right, right, right.
Sometimes for the sake of action.
Yeah, absolutely. And the warrior is the one who is, as Cliff said, in service and willing to do the hard thing for the greater good. The warrior is willing to kill what needs to die in order to make room for something new to be born.
Yep. The warrior is also the part of us that is willing to have part of us die in service for the higher good. In the highest sense, it's the way a soldier is willing to die for the sake of a country. We see that kind of courage and nobility carried out in the psychological realm when we see that there's parts of us that are willing to die for the greater good.
Yeah, warrior is about commitment and integrity and doing it.
Yep. Professions in our culture that have or need a lot of warrior energy are people who are engaged in working with the law. Lawyers, police people, judges, they all need a lot of warrior energy to carry out those professions.
And even people in business. Business is a lot about warrior energy. The bottom line, what's real, what's practical.
Right. So
warrior
energy. As well as people who are actually in the military in any country, these other professions also require and are good models of warrior energy.
Right. So the element that we connect up with warrior energy is the element of the earth. We think that warrior energy is very earthy energy. It's grounded, solid, practical, down to earth. It's what's real is warrior energy.
Yeah. And in the family role system of Sharon Wegscheider, we see the family role as being the role of the rebel in the family. Usually there's one child that excels at breaking the family rules, stepping outside of the boundaries, sort of going on the offensive, and she calls that role the rebel. Or sometimes it's also called a scapegoat. This is more on the defensive side of it. Sometimes there's one child in the family that takes a lot of the punishment, gets blamed for a lot of the things, is the kid who acts out in a bad way and then gets blamed for it.
Right, right. So the animal instinct that we connect up with warrior energy is about territoriality. We all have, you know, an inner junkyard dog who marks our territory and then defends it. And we believe that we each have an instinct in us still to carve out our niche, to carve out a territory and protect it and defend it.
Yep. Most often the territory we're defending inside of ourselves is our what we call our ego. And it's our warrior archetype that comes along to defend whatever it is that we call us, call our ego. The gateway emotion into warrior energy, as we see it, is anger. And by that, again, we mean that we don't see the warrior as necessarily always angry or lashing out at people out of anger. The warrior energy itself has to do with power.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes the way to get in touch with your power is to go through your anger. If you can make friends with your anger, if you can allow it to exist in a way that doesn't hurt other people, you can get to know it and get the gold out of your anger, oftentimes that will open up the warrior archetype inside of you and allow you to really fully be in your power.
We think anger is a clue that there's something going on about my boundaries. So if I'm feeling angry, then I'm having some boundary issue. Maybe my boundaries are being invaded, and I need to deal with that. Now, it may mean that I need to shift where my boundaries are, that my boundaries may be in an inappropriate place. But it also may mean that I need to protect my boundaries, that anger is a cue that I need to call on my warrior energy and deal with my boundaries in some way.
Right. In some ways, we see anger as the psychological equivalent of pain mm-hmm. in the body. You have pain in your body to tell you when something goes through your skin, so you'll notice and do something about it.
Your physical boundary.
Right. And we think you have anger in your emotions for much the same purpose, to tell you when a line's been crossed, when something's invaded.
So what does warrior energy look like when it goes in shadow? Well, if I'm on the deflated side, if I'm in a place where it looks like I have too little warrior energy, then I'm kind of flaky, actually. I'm kind of ungrounded, and I am in a place of having no boundaries. I give myself away. I can't say no. I'll do anything for anybody and always put myself second and other people first. And I probably have a real hatred of conflict of any kind. I don't want to say anything that could be perceived as conflictual in any way. I don't want to get involved in conflicts or fighting, none of that. Can't we just, you know, get over this whole anger thing, please?
Yeah, big shadow of mine. And when I'm in that particular shadow, I often wind up being the victim of things. That's just the way it plays out. If I won't put up a boundary, I'm going to usually get invaded. On the other side of the coin, if I have too much warrior energy for the mix, I'll be, you know, the antagonist, or I'll be sort of savage, or just out there doing a sort of slash and burn thing with my personal relationships, attacking people, accosting them. This is sort of the offensive side of the warrior equation gone amok.
Or I may be overly defensive. I may, you know, have a stone wall around me and not let people in, and just be completely defensive with my back up all the time.
Yep. The shaming message, as we see it, that is taken into our minds that makes all of these warrior shadows much worse, is the message that somehow you don't exist. Somehow you aren't really here.
Right, and what we really think that means is that you don't exist as separate from other people, particularly from the people that you're close to. And this wound goes in when your boundaries are continually invaded, and you're not allowed to have separate thoughts, separate dreams, separate actions, separate space as you're growing up.
Yep. This will create a lot of shadows about having to either be too offensive or too defensive, or not offensive enough or not defensive enough, because we aren't sure who we are. The territory around our ego, the boundary around that is not clear, and so we wind up with a wound where we're always trying to prove or find out just exactly where it is. We express a lot of sort of unbalanced warrior energy.
Right. So the tool that we use in shadow work when working with someone with a warrior shadow is to set some kind of a boundary. Either we will set what we think of as a boundary on the future, a goal, or we'll set some kind of boundary in the present, a physical boundary, so that a person can really let the warrior energy come up and through their body in particular, to be able to really feel it and experience it and express it in a way where they don't get hurt and nobody else gets hurt. A lot of times, for many of us, put our warrior energy in shadow because we've seen either we've hurt someone with our warrior energy, or we've seen someone be hurt by someone else's warrior energy.
Right. For most of us, it's been a long time since we've had the opportunity to really feel our own power in operation. And for people who want to do that, we can set up a shadow work process where they're able usually to go through their emotion of anger in such a way that they have enough boundaries around them, that they know that it's completely safe. And they don't have to do anything they don't want to. No one's going to force them to do anything they don't want to do, nor can they hurt themselves or anyone else in the process. And they get a chance to really feel the flow of their own power by being able to go through their anger doorway and really access and touch a deep place inside of their warrior.
So that's the warrior quarter. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to wrap up.
Thank you.
So in wrapping up, we'd like to give you some idea of what it might be like for you if you came to do a piece of shadow work. Shadow work is done in a number of contexts in different seminars.
We do groups on weekends. We work with couples. We work with an individual who will come and spend a couple of days doing some intensive work with us.
Right. But regardless of the setting, we will always begin by setting some kind of a container first, which means we'll talk with you until we feel that a container has been set where you know what we believe and we know what you want to have happen in that place, and you are familiar and comfortable with the psychological surroundings so that you feel safe enough to want to start talking about a shift that you would like.
To talk about what you want to have happen.
Right. We will invariably start with the direct question, what do you want to have happen? And just let you talk in your own words about whatever shift or change you might like to see inside of yourself or in your life so that we can navigate by that.
And then we will combine the options and advice of the magician with the motivation and the inspiration of the sovereign and tap into the deep feeling of the lover and then focus all of that into some kind of doing, using the warrior energy in some way to help create whatever shift or transformation it is that you want to have happen for yourself.
Right. People find that working inside of what we call a ritual or symbolic container in such a safe space will produce a permanent lasting change that they can create inside of their own personality, inside of their own life.
And it's not something that you have to work on remembering or hanging on to when you leave. That's actually a neat thing about shadow work. Once you've done a process, there is a shift that happens there, and you don't have to go back and read your notes later on to kind of keep it going for yourself. You've created a new pattern in your brain that can and will continue to serve you.
Right. And in order to come and do shadow work in any of its forms, you also don't have to remember everything on this tape.
Right.
You don't have to have it all straight, exactly what process you want to do or how it should go before you would come and do shadow work. We can help you work on that if that's difficult.
Right.
What we think is important for you to determine from listening to this tape is whether or not it sounds like this work will fit for you. You know, we want you to notice if there's things we have said here, things that we believe that really grate on what you believe and might make it very difficult for you to work with us. And in that event, you might want to reconsider doing shadow work with us.
Right. There are a number of certified shadow work facilitators who are doing all kinds of work all over the place. And all of those facilitators follow the beliefs that we have expressed here on this tape. We all work from the same model and use the same technologies and techniques. And before we finish, we want to thank our dear friend John Whalen for writing and performing the music on this tape. It's his original composition, Spring River Waltz, and he very generously let us use his music on this tape.
Hi, it's me, Vicki Woodard again. As you have learned, shadow work is an ideal place to work in an atmosphere of great safety. People in our group seminars often tell us that they have never sensed such safety anywhere before in their lives. And for those who want to work on issues that require an even greater degree of safety, like sexuality or abuse, or for those who just don't feel safe in groups because they've been wounded by group dynamics, we can now offer the additional safety of one-on-one shadow work coaching. You can find information on all our groups and see pictures of us and our other facilitators and coaches on our webpage at shadowwork.com. There is a book written to give you a sense of what shadow work feels like from the inside. It's an account of what you might experience if you did some shadow work. The book is called Practically Shameless by Alice Berry. There is also a CD for sale on our website, which will actually take you through one of the shadow work processes. That CD is called The Tombstone Process. And there's another CD which will teach you how to make your communications with other people much safer using what we call clean talk. This is a great tool for relationships. At the webpage, you can sign up for our newsletter and see other events and products as well. And now we'll use the rest of the time on the CD for the beautiful music of John Wayland's Spring River Waltz. Goodbye.